Episode 1223, My Strength is My Story with Bonnie Christian, A Flexible Faith.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at a
stop sign, watching. Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day of the week. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us an incredible woman, Bonnie Christian. She's written a book, and it's called A Flexible Faith. Have you ever thought about what it means to follow Jesus today? Where do you fit in? Where does Christ fit into your life? We dive deep. You'll want to stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Bonnie's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, Bonnie and I had an extraordinary conversation, and one that I think really will strike a chord with you. These are some tough questions, and her book is made up of multitudes of chapters, 17 actually, and questions that we ask when it comes to the Christian faith. We talk about guinea pigs, recommitment, revival, what it means to truly have Christ in your life. We go back in history too. I'm telling you, it is an extraordinary conversation, one that you are going to want to tune into because there might be questions that you're asking yourself. But before we jump in, a word from our sponsor, Health, Hope, and Inspiration with Reverend Percy McCray, created by Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Almost everyone has been affected by cancer in some way, maybe even someone you love. According to the American Cancer Society, one out of every two men and one out of every three women will receive a cancer diagnosis in their lifetime. An estimated 1.6 million adults will be diagnosed with cancer this year. It may be you or someone you love, but there is hope for anyone facing cancer. Join in on this weekly podcast, Health, Hope, and Inspiration, as Reverend Percy McCray talks with wellness professionals, doctors, pastors, and everyday people who share their expertise, experiences, and stories of hope. Take a moment to visit healthhopeandinspiration.com to subscribe to the podcast for free. We look forward to seeing you there. So are you ready to rethink what it means to follow Jesus today? Well, without further ado, let's welcome in Bonnie Christian, A Flexible Faith. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. I'm so excited. It is My Strength is My Story series, and we have with us an incredible millennial, Bonnie Christian. She is a wife of 6 years with two dogs and two guinea pigs. I love guinea pigs, I'm just saying. She received her master's degree of arts in Christian thought from Bethel Seminary and won the 2016 Zondervan Excellence in Theology Award. As a theological and political writer, you can read her columns and bylines at The Week, Rare, Time, CNN, Relevant, Politico, The Hill, Renew, The Los Angeles Times, and The American Conservative. That's just to name a few. And now, Bonnie is the author of her brand new book, A Flexible Faith, Rethinking What It Means to Follow Jesus Today. An incredible book. Welcome, Bonnie, my friend and sister in Christ. How are you?
I am good, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I cannot wait to dive in. Your book needed to be written years and years and years. Maybe we should say decades, maybe centuries. But you know what? I think it's appropriate in the time that it was, you know, that it's actually written in. And I believe that it will bless people. And on top of that, I also believe it will bring some clarity to religion and Christianity as a whole for an individual.
Yeah, and that is my hope. You know, it's funny you mention it could have been written years ago. I think that's true. I also think, though, that we're in a unique time where even just in terms of advances of like communication technology and like how we connect with each other, that we're more exposed to new ideas and new religious ideas and political ideas at a faster rate than we used to be. And so it becomes more important now to really proactively engage in that stuff instead of sort of being hit unexpectedly with like questions or doubts that we don't know how to answer.
Very true. Well, I've got to ask you, what brings joy to your heart?
Oh man. Well, we were talking before we started recording here about today. I'm mulching my garden, and I really enjoy just a day where I can hang out at home and get things done. And you mentioned I have guinea pigs and dogs. It's great to just have a day to hang out with them and do things on my own schedule. So yeah, today's a good day. It's a joyful day in that sense.
Oh, fabulous. Well, now you mentioned you have two dogs, but guinea pigs. What is this fascination with guinea pigs?
Well, when I was in third grade, I lived in China for a year. My mom was teaching English, and so we were there for a year. And while we were out in the market one day, and there was a crowd of people, and they had a very small cage with a very small guinea pig in it. And our friend bartered for it, and I went home with this guinea pig. And then by some like miracle of bureaucracy, I don't know, we got this guinea pig home to America with us with no quarantine at all. Like, I brought a rodent from China to America in the 90s with no quarantine. It was just, we were there. I had like this little typed document that some Chinese official, I was in third grade, so these details are fuzzy to me, but some Chinese official like looked at the guinea pig and typed up, "This is good." And so I brought the guinea pig home. I've had some most of the time ever since, and still do. And they're great animals for a writer, because they're very sedate. They really just want to sit in your lap while you're, you know, writing.
Yeah, they are. And I grew up with guinea pigs, too. I had a fascination with them. So when I read that all about you, I'm like, oh, guinea pigs, not very many people talk about their guinea pigs.
It's true. And I think people think of them as like a kid's pet. But I mean, kids like to run around and like have fun with dogs. Adults are the ones who just want something that's going to be warm and sit on their lap while they watch TV. I think it's a great adult pet.
Yeah, I agree. I know. Well, don't tell my children that, because they'll all want guinea pigs. And I'm kind of ready to start, you know, fading out the animals because they're getting older. And so then I want them to take the animals with them. But, you know, that's for another episode. Well, tell us a little bit about growing up in your faith.
Yeah, well, so I mentioned we lived in China for a year. That was one of many moves. We moved around a lot. I think the number is something like 8 or 10 places by the time I finished high school. And then I've moved several times since then, although now we live in Minnesota and are not planning to leave anytime soon. But as a result of all that moving, we went to more churches than I think is average. And that kind of feeds into the project that I'm doing with this book. Just sort of that history of being familiar with a lot of different church contexts and seeing different ways that people do faith and different ways that people follow Jesus. And so I was mostly in Christian schools as well. And then I would say that it was really like towards later high school that I began to think about, you know, if I'm serious about this, I should sort of claim it for myself and figure out what's really going on here. And so I took a year off in between high school and college to go to Youth with a Mission, which is an international missions organization, YWAM, if you're familiar with that. And so that was a super good experience. It was very much out of my comfort zone. They were a bit more charismatic Pentecostal than I was used to, but it was a good experience. So then after college, a few years, I really felt called to go to seminary just to continue sort of exploring some of my own faith, and then also particularly as a younger woman writing about topics that are theological topics that are traditionally covered by older men, it's important to have that academic credential. That brings us up to where we are now.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, when did you really begin your relationship with Jesus and claim him? Because being around that, you moved and all, some people accept him, you know, as their personal savior very young, or it's, you know, it's doctrine because of their family, but then they get older. When was like that light bulb moment for you?
Yeah. I mean, I know when I was just based on where we were living, I was 5 or 6. I had like the, I want to accept Jesus in my heart conversation with my mom on the way home from church. And I do think that was real. On the other hand, I was 5 or 6. And so I think throughout like maybe middle school times, I sort of fell prey to what I think a lot of kids who grew up in church fall prey to, which is this idea, like there's these regular calls to sort of like recommit your life to Christ, which is not a bad thing, but you get worried of like, did I really do it right the first time? And so you do that repeatedly, like whether it's really necessary or not, because you're just sort of scared that, you know, maybe you didn't do it good enough with your first prayer. And so then, yeah, like I mentioned, it was sort of in later high school where I began to think more seriously about like, what does this mean? What impact should it be having on my daily life? And there was sort of a, I think we called it a revival at the time. There was a renewed interest in, particularly with my class. I went to a small Christian school, and so there were only about 20 of us, but in my class. But there was this little mini revival in our class that senior year, junior and senior year, and that pushed me as well to think seriously about like, what do I mean when I say I'm a Christian, and how is that going to direct my life going forward?
Is that when you really began to connect this whole thing and rethinking, you know, what it means to follow Jesus today?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, as I mentioned before we started recording, I think this is a book that I would have done very well to have back then. I mean, I went to school with Methodists and Presbyterians and Lutherans. There's even a Greek Orthodox kid in my class, and I could not have told you like, what's the difference between their church and mine? And why does that matter? And should I, you know more about what their churches believe and think? And like, maybe are their churches more right than mine? And so as much as I was starting to explore my faith and for myself for the first time, I didn't, I knew a lot about the Bible and I knew a lot about like my own church tradition, but in terms of like sort of the big sweep of church history and like all of the variety of Christianity that we have today, I did not know much. And I think that that's unfortunate because, you know, these people are our brothers and sisters in the faith as well, even if they do things a little bit differently than we do. And it's advantageous to know that stuff, especially if you are in that season of like questioning and examining things.
Very true. You all are going to want to read and learn all about A Flexible Faith by purchasing your own book of A Flexible Faith, Rethinking What It Means to Follow Jesus Today. Bonnie, tell us a little bit about how the layout is of this book, how you structured it, because I really did think that it was great. You don't have to read this book from the beginning to the end. You can just kind of go and start at chapter 7 if that's where you want to be in.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's formatted like a reference book, you know, like a dictionary or an encyclopedia where you can just go directly to the part that you have a question about. But it's written so that it's super accessible and ideally super engaging so that if you don't have a huge background in theology or you are, you know, 16, you can still read it and understand it and benefit from it. And so the bulk of the book is, I think it's 17 chapters that each one starts off with a question in theology. So, for example, does being a Christian make you stop sinning? I'm cheating off my own content page here. Are men and women equal in the church and home? Should Christians vote? What happens at the end of the world? These kinds of questions. And so then for each of those chapters that start off with a question, I go through sort of the different answers that Christians have given over the centuries. And sometimes it's only two, usually it's like three or four. And these are all questions that are answers that are not, they're safe, they're orthodox, they're not heresy. They're the sort of things where like, you know, maybe a Catholic and a Baptist disagree, but neither one is going to say, you know, because you disagree with me on this, you're not really a Christian. So these are all questions about like important issues, but they're not the really questions about the really core stuff of the faith, like, you know, who Jesus is and, you know, that Jesus is the only way to salvation. It's sort of the next step down, important things, but not that very core that all Christians agree upon. So that's like the bulk of the book. But then in between the chapters, there are these short interviews. They're like 5-question like Q&As, and those introduce people to Christians who are in more like unusual lifestyles of faith. So, for example, there's like a Benedictine nun. Yes, there's a member of a Common Purse community. or they'd have all their money in common. They're not Amish, though. Intriguingly, they use the internet. It's very fascinating. There's a Coptic Orthodox deacon. There's an Amish family. There's a liberation theologian. So it's people that even if you spend like your whole life in church, you may never have an opportunity to meet someone who's following Jesus in this more unusual way. And so with that, and then also with sort of these super short historical profiles in the issue chapters, the question chapters, what I really wanted to do was not just talk about like what are the different theological opinions, but get a more personal introduction to just these different followers of Jesus who are also part of the body of Christ.
Well, I love how it's laid out. And I think it's so important because like you said, we attend our churches and we get comfortable in where we attend. And then we begin to identify with the church, not even the religion part of it, but I go to, and this is the church I go to. But we've got to remember that we're not the only church. You know, we're down south here, and when you're in the Bible Belt, there's like a church every other street, not block, just street. And so it can get kind of a little bit wild. I think it's nice to kind of know your neighbor. And that's what I got from this in your Q&A portion of it is like, wow, you can meet your neighbor that you may never meet before or interact with them and understand them better.
Exactly. And I think that helps us understand that while, you know, the differences that divide different denominations are important and they do matter. And obviously we do want to do our best to find out what's true about those questions and, you know, follow that truth. Just because someone, you know, is we disagree with them, we think they're wrong on a few things, it doesn't mean that they're not Christians. It doesn't mean that they're our enemies. It doesn't mean that we can't, you know, work with them on community projects. Like, I think that it's really sad and unfortunate when we become sort of suspicious of fellow Christians because they're just a little bit different from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in your story, you even write, or in your book, you write about the pool and where you grow up. Share that story.
Yeah, so I was living, actually, have you seen the movie Runaway Bride or Tuck Everlasting? Yeah, so both those movies were filmed in the town where I grew up. So super cute little town. Well, I say I grew up, as I said, I moved many times, but it was one of the ones I lived longer. So I was living there and we went to a Baptist church at that time. And the Baptist church was built a little bit more recently than most of the other churches in town. And so we had some more space. We had this big grassy lawn that there was like this decades long history well before I'd gotten there of what should we do with this grass area that we have. And so I love pools. And so I was like, oh, we should have a pool like for the neighborhood, for the community. And people who, you know, wouldn't come to Sunday service would love to come to the pool because we didn't have one in the town. And so, you know, of course, our church, we had the land, but we didn't have the money or people to build it or like lifeguard it ourselves. So I said, you know, why don't we, there's like six or seven other churches in town, why don't we all work together? We'll provide the land, they'll pitch in on the money and the volunteers, and we'll have this thing going every summer. It'll be like a huge, great outreach thing. And so there may have been like so many practical reasons why this could not happen. But the reason why I was told it could not happen was that like we disagreed too much with these other churches on theology stuff. And like, we can't, you know, sit next to the Episcopalians by the side of the pool and, you know, have fun and tell people about Jesus together because it's just too different. And the assumption was that the other churches would feel the same way, that they would also be wary about like going in on this big project together with all these different Christians from different traditions. And I think that's just, it's so unfortunate. I mean, like I said, maybe it wouldn't have happened anyway. Maybe there would have been practical things that would have gotten in the way, but the idea of you're not, you know, maybe quite Christian enough because, you know, you're a Methodist or you're a Lutheran, that's silly. And I think it really harms our witness, like as the body of Christ, if we can't get along about something so simple.
I agree with you on that completely. Well, as we talked about, you share a lot of stories in your book. What story was most eye-opening to you?
That is a difficult one. Some that were very Well, so there's one that I share at the beginning of the chapter that asks about like war and violence. And so it's a story about, and I believe it was in the 1500s or 1600s, so like Reformation times, pretty soon thereafter. There was this guy named Dirk Willems in the Netherlands, and he was an Anabaptist Christian, I believe a Mennonite or some similar peace church tradition. So he was a pacifist. And, you know, the big controversy then was that the Anabaptists wanted to do adult baptism, and like the Catholics and the Lutherans were not down with that. And so the Anabaptists are getting, you know, arrested and executed because of the baptism, which is so strange to think about now. No one gets upset about baptism, right? But it was the big deal back then. And so he gets arrested, and he's like rotting in the castle dungeon or whatever. And I think it was a tower, because he like did the classic tying your sheets together thing and climbed out the window. And so he's running away. And because he's been in prison for a while and they're not really feeding him much, he's real skinny. And so he runs across a frozen lake. It's winter in the Netherlands. And he gets across fine. But then the guard who's chasing him to try to bring him back to prison is better fed. And so he falls through the lake, falls through the ice, and he's drowning. And so this guy, Dirk, he notices what's happening behind him. And of course he's a pacifist. He's so committed to this idea of loving your enemies, that he like without hesitation spins around, goes back, rescues this guy, saves his life. And then they burned him at the stake. Like he knew that he was going to turn around and that that would cost him his life and that he would die, to save this guy who wants to kill him. And he went back anyway, without a moment's hesitation. And so I think stories like that, and other stories from church history that I talk about, and even the modern ones too, it's really remarkable, I think, and such a challenge to look at what people have sacrificed for their faith. And I think it really puts in perspective some of our modern arguments that we get into, where it seems, you know, so life or death, and like, yeah, it's important, but it's not you just saved your enemy's life and now he's gonna execute you. And so, yeah, it's very challenging, and I think inspiring while I was writing, to go through that history and encounter a lot of these, you know, really impressive and incredible stories.
Where do you think we have dropped the ball when it comes to history, religion, and really teaching our younger generations coming up as to tolerance, respect?
Yeah, I mean, I think even just encountering more of the history helps with a lot of that. It helps gain that perspective. And this is one thing where I think we Protestants really fall short, maybe more than like our Catholic and Eastern Orthodox peers. I think they have a better attention to history and to that tradition. But of course, you know, we were like, oh, just the Bible, you know, we're not going to be ruled by church tradition. And not that that's a bad thing. Like, obviously, I'm all about the Bible. But the loss is significant. And so, like, my own education in church history, and I went to Christian schools for all but, like, 1 or 2 years growing up. I could have told you, you know, a lot about like Jesus and like the super early church of what happens in Acts. And then I had like a 1500 year knowledge gap until you get to like the Protestant Reformation. But there were a lot of Christians, like that's 3/4 of the church's history. There were a lot of people, you know, doing and thinking and serving Jesus in there. And I think we should know about them too. And then even after the Protestant Reformation, I would say I pretty much knew about like the Puritans, and then nothing until now. And that's, it's has real bad consequences, because there are ideas that we might encounter now that we think are like, oh, this is a very strange thing. This is a, you know, a new idea. This is a new way of praying, or this is a new way of, you know, like some sort of personal devotional practice. And it's like, no, that's been around for 1,000 years. You just didn't hear about it. And so, yeah, I think that it's, I'm not sure how we fix that, but I think we need to know more about our history to get a better idea of how different the church has always been, so that we aren't troubled when we see how different it is today.
Mm. we need to sink our teeth into that one right there, because we do need to be talking about this. And the conversation that you're bringing up now, Bonnie, with your new book, A Flexible Faith, Rethinking What It Means to Follow Jesus Today, that's going to help with the conversation. And I have five children. And so I know that this read, and reading it myself, you can have your middle schoolers read this easily. And I would even go as far as, if you've got a really bright one on your hand, you could even do fourth or fifth grade. You know, homeschoolers, pick up this book. Great conversation starters.
Yeah, and so every chapter ends with discussion questions, which I included specifically for like those more educational contexts, so that it's like there's an easy, straightforward way to talk about this when it's, and not just sort of, you know, give it to a kid and leave them hanging and like, you know, where do you go next? But I always think about, you know, we talk about, at least when I was a kid, I would always hear sort of this horror story of, you know, you raise your kid in church and in Christian schools or homeschool or whatever the case may be, and then they go off to college and they encounter new ideas and they lose their faith. And so part of what I had in mind when I was writing this book was, your kid is going to encounter new ideas, like whether it's in college or just going directly out into the world. You can't stop that from happening. They may change their mind. They may not find themselves no longer convinced by like exactly the faith that they were taught growing up. But wouldn't it be better if they maybe just end up switching denominations because they found another one that, you know, is more suitable to what they believe now, as opposed to leaving the faith entirely? And so I think my goal here is to move us away from saying like, the one version of faith that I taught you is the only way you can be a Christian, and if you can't be a Christian like this, you need to go be an atheist. To say instead, like, I would prefer, and I think what I taught you is right and good, and I would prefer that you stay here and be a Christian this way. But if you need to go be a Christian in a different way, if you need to convert to a different denomination, I would love for you to do that instead of going and being an atheist.
And you wrote in your book, Jesus is the non-negotiable anchor of Christianity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that when we understand that that Christians have disagreed about the less important stuff, it makes it easier for us to hang on to that anchor and to not waver on that central, most important point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need that grounding and that foundational part of it. And I mean, you name it right there. It's Jesus. That's the fundamental. You can have all these other things coming in and out, but what it is right now is Jesus, and you name it. And I think with younger children, especially because of technology, I mean, it's awesome. We get to be states away, hundreds and hundreds of miles from each other. It's cool. And yet we can still have these discussions and we can talk and get to know one another. But the problem with that is that we don't have tradition being brought up like it used to be, of storytelling, passing on, literally passing on the baton. And I think you raise some very good points here in your book, A Flexible Faith.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's my hope. And I would love to see it used for, you know, Christian education, even I think as late as like freshman year of college at Christian schools, when Christian kids are encountering, maybe for the first time, kids from a lot of different Christian traditions and, you know, left without, if we don't address these issues, it's not like they're not going to talk about their differences. It's not like they're not going to figure out, hey, we disagree on these things. It's just going to be like they talk about it and then it's, okay, well, where do we go from here? How do we know whose ideas are okay? And so I think it's better to be proactive about it and to talk about it up front and say, like, look, this is, like, the church has had room for these disagreements while still following Jesus together. And so let's talk about this before you run into all these questions so you're not just blindsided.
I agree. Amen. Well, in the book, you write about the nuns. And that's N-O-N-E-S. Make sure we understand which nuns we're talking about here. These are the people who say, when asked what the religion is, their answer is none. Mm-hmm. How do you think the church is being impacted today because of that?
Yeah, so it's interesting because their situation is, it's not like sort of like aggressive atheism. Like they're not, you know, real diehard about there is no God. Maybe they think there's a God, but it's just like, you know, what does that have to do with me? And this really, as much as I think we can get, you know, maybe too worked up about these things, I think sometimes we get a little too freaked out, but this really is happening. Like, people really are on a large scale shifting away from the church or never entering it in the first place to fall into this category of just like, I don't have a religion. Maybe they're spiritual, but not religious, that sort of thing. And it's difficult, I think, for the church to confront, because it's a new situation for us. It's not like, you know, where you're maybe talking to an unreached people group for the first time, and maybe they have their own religion. So they have sort of that framework of religion, even if it's a different one. And it's also different from, you know, sort of the hundreds of years when Christianity was primarily in Europe, and it's just assumed that everybody has like the same mindset. Everybody has the same concerns about, you know, sin and hell and following God. So it's a new situation, and I think we haven't figured out how to handle it super well. Like, how do you talk to someone who their assumption is just, I don't need to be religious. I think being open with them about the variation of thought within Christianity can help, though, because instead of presenting them with just like, you know, one denomination or movement's vision of the faith, and then if they say, well, I'm not that, I can't believe that, you just say, oh, well, I guess you can't, you're still going to be a nun. I think it's better to, it's very confusing, the N-O-N-E. I was preparing for I'm having a book launch party this coming week. And I was preparing to, like, for the reading, you know, and I was reading that chapter, and I realized midway through, like, oh, people are going to think I'm talking about, like, the nuns at the nunnery. But anyway, if we can be more honest and upfront about, like, look, there's a lot of different ways that people have been Christians, and maybe this one you can't, you know, believe with integrity, like, you can't force yourself to believe that, but, you know, there's a lot of other ways, and there's a lot of other things we can talk about. So let's talk about that.
What do you think the individual Christian can do?
Buy my book? No.
I do think that's important, though, Bonnie, because that's gonna strike up the conversation, because I do believe that we are stuck. You've got the older generation, and I come from a preacher kid. Okay, my father was a minister. I grew up in the faith. I was born into the faith. We have traveled around. I've actually moved more than you have, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we won't count that, but it's too many. But, and with that, he's also been a chaplain in the military. Mm. So I have seen the world, and I've seen the world of churches, and I see the older generation that gets stuck, and they're like, this is the only way, because this is the only way they know. I mean, you write in your book a story about how, you know, your church, you know, churches weren't surviving. They're, you know, the parking lot's bigger than what it is full. And it's a sad thing. And then we have kind of the middle generation. I'm the older one here. You're not. You're the younger one. So I would kind of fall into that. And it's where we want to continue to revive it, but we're stuck because we have to honor. We were taught to honor our elders. But yet we know that our younger generation is beginning to fall. And then we're being challenged by the millennials and technology. So, you know, for us as individual Christians, we got to get out of our own box and start this conversation with questions, understanding different faiths, and being, I believe, truly open to hearing and listening to other people and not being so close-minded.
Yeah, and I don't think it means it's interesting because the title, this is, we went through like probably 20 different title options, and A Flexible Faith was, you know, not the first or the second or the third. And it's been interesting because flexible can be a good thing or a bad thing, right? And so it's been interesting the reactions that I get with this title, because for some people, and generally it tends to be younger people, when they hear flexible, they think like, oh, that's a good thing. Like, there's going to be, that means there's going to be room for me. And then for other people, and generally, but not always older people, they hear flexible and they think, oh, does that mean you're saying, you know, maybe that there's no such thing as truth, or like that these, like, you know, following Jesus, like Jesus isn't the only way, or that we should be flexible in everything. And so I want to emphasize that's not what I'm saying. And I think for the individual Christian, it sort of depends on where they find themselves and where they find, you know, like their family and friends and loved ones. And so, like, I'm not saying we all need to just like swap churches. Like, if you are good with your church, if you're, you know, confident in your convictions and it's like working for you, that's a very strange way to say it. But if, you know, if you're growing in your faith and you're serving in your community and that's great, stay there. Like, don't leave. I mean, I think it's important to like learn about what, as we were talking earlier, to learn about what other Christians are doing and like sort of demystify that and be willing to work with them. But you certainly stay in your church. But if you or if you have like friends or family who are maybe already considering themselves a nun, N-O-N-E, or they're in like a serious phase of like doubt or deconstruction where they're, you know, just really struggling of like, can I stay in the faith as I've known it? I think at that point, you know, we do need to come in and say like, look, here are these other ideas. And maybe, you know, you don't end up coming to my church, but my priority is not that you come to my church. My priority is that you are in the faith and you are going to a church and that you are growing in your faith in some context, even if it's not exactly my context.
Mm. I love that. We need to be more open. There still can be solid truth in being more open, hence your title of Flexible Faith. I think it's a good one. It stirs conversation, Bonnie, and if we don't get the conversation started, where is it ever going to start? It's not. We're just going to stay, you know, status quo.
And it's tricky. So like from a pastor's perspective, like I super understand, you know, if you're teaching kids, you're dealing with congregants, you're not going to say like, oh, there's all these options. You're going to teach, you know, what you believe is true, and that's reasonable and right and makes sense. But when I think we have people who are already at the point of saying, I don't know if I believe the option you've taught me anymore, whether that's as a pastor or especially as a parent, I think at that point, you know, we need to be prepared to say, well, there are other options and they're still Christian and we can talk about them and let's do that.
Well, you've worked in media and public policy. How has that influenced your life in combination with your religious beliefs?
Well, so a lot of the writing I do on a weekly basis is much more political than this book. In terms of this book, I think a big way that it's influenced me is just in terms of sort of bringing like a journalistic ethic to it of trying to, you know, report things fairly and even, you know, with the viewpoints that I very much disagree with, trying to give a fair account and like going, like when researching, going to, you know, what does the advocate of this view say as opposed to like what do the critics of this view say so that I can be fair to it. More broadly, I think I do write about the intersection of like faith and politics. And so my big caution there for myself is that I always want to be careful to keep things in perspective and to say like, yes, I care about these political issues like a lot. And I think they're important, but you know, they're not the most important thing compared to faith and you know, what happens with the government matters, but what happens with the church should matter more. And certainly does matter more, you know, in an eternal sense. And then I'm also a second caution that I have for myself is to always make sure to say, you know, here's how I think my faith and politics fit together. And I think it's important that they fit together. But I always want to avoid saying, you know, my politics are the only politics that you can have as a Christian. And so I want to recognize that that's another issue where Christians can agree to disagree. And obviously there are, you know, some things that you can't do. Like, I don't think you can be a Christian Nazi. But outside of, you know, those extremes, sort of, you know, in the general range of acceptable politics, we can agree to disagree on that, and we need to remember that we're Christians before we're, you know, Democrats or Republicans or libertarians or socialists or whatever the case may be.
All good points. Did y'all hear that? You need to listen. Just saying, you know, our time in the world and everything has changed dramatically. And you researching your book and getting all this, I know you have seen the changes, and more so because you couldn't fit all your research into this book. There's no way. So I really appreciate your perspective on that, because I do think it's important that we don't say, you know, the only way is a highway, except going back to what you said, Jesus is the non-negotiable anchor of Christianity. You know, that
absolutely
still that foundational point, the pivotal point in everything.
It is. And I think it's, you know, there's that famous quote from, I want to say it's Gandhi, about like, I like your Christ, but I don't like your Christians. And I think about, and, you know, other people have said similar things. It's so important that we're not like making ourselves into a distraction from Jesus, and not setting up artificial barriers that he didn't set up, and saying, you know, you have to check off all these boxes that Jesus never said you have to check off. And so that's, I think, a way we have to always, you know, evaluate ourselves and say, like, am I making it more difficult for people to follow Jesus than it needs to be?
Good point. Well, what is the driving force behind your passion about vibrant diversity?
I mean, a big one is just seeing people in my generation leave the church, and I don't think they need to. Sort of like avoiding an unnecessary misunderstanding. And, you know, it's, I think that the misunderstanding often happens because of good reasons, like good motivations. You know, when people say they're, you know, you have to be a Christian the way that I've taught you in just this one way, I think they're well-intentioned and they're trying to point people towards the truth. But I do think it creates a misunderstanding that we don't need to have and that we can avoid. And so I want to help keep that from happening. And then it also goes back to just sort of the cooperation, like within the church itself, across denominational lines. Obviously we don't want to, you know, devalue truth just so that we can cooperate. Right. But Christians are supposed to be known by our love and our unity. And so how tragic is it when we don't know how to disagree well, and when we are more known for our division than for anything else? I think, like, you know, at the end, in the resurrection, when Jesus comes back, it'll be like a great joy to see the church visibly united and, you know, all agreeing and worshiping together. That will be wonderful, but we don't have that right now, and realistically we can't have that right now. And so we need to figure out a way to work together in spite of that, and to be you know, just more functional as the body of Christ, because there are a lot of things that we need to be doing and needs that we need to be serving, and we need to not let our own like disagreements and egos get in the way.
We definitely need to bridge the gap, and hopefully when everybody picks up their own copy of A Flexible Faith, rethinking what it means to follow Jesus today, that gap will be bridged, and we'll begin to understand each other a little bit more. We have so much at our fingertips now. There is really no excuse for us not to learn and to ask more questions and to be more tolerant and respectful. I think some people leave the whole idea out that, well, if I respect something, then that means I'm agreeing with them and I believe that that is to be truth. No. It's not, in my opinion. That respect, you can show someone respect, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily agree with everything that's being said or what they're doing. Now, yes, you could go with the right or wrong argument, but when we're talking about just religion and Christianity here, you know, we have to understand and really look at how Jesus served on this earth. You know, what would Jesus do?
Yeah, and I mean, Jesus unquestionably hung out with people that, you know, he would have said were wrong on things, on different issues, whether in terms of, you know, their behavior or even their theology. I mean, the disciples are constantly getting stuff wrong. My small group just went through the Gospel of John, and there are times where it seems like Jesus is just like so exhausted with the disciples' misunderstanding. He's like, you guys, we've been over this. I've told you it is not what you think. Just again and again and again. I also think of, you know, in the early chapters of 1 Corinthians, which we're teaching through on Sunday mornings right now, one of the big issues was that the church that Paul was writing to at Corinth was super divided about following different human leaders. And so, and one of them was Paul. Like, he had his own like faction and fans. But he came in and was like, no. Like, you can disagree on these things, but you're not loyal to different leaders. You're not loyal to me. Like, you should be loyal to Jesus. And so, like, even for his own fans, he was shutting that down of like, I am not the point here.
I don't know what it is, Bonnie, but we do need to have this conversation started, and your book is definitely bringing it to light, and I hope people will read it. And I think too, regardless, maybe you're very secure in your religious beliefs and where you are in your traditions and your doctrine and how you were raised and what you believe. I still think there's a lot to be learned, and it's good to be challenged, because challenges what strengthen us. God does it to us every day.
And you may even end up just like, now I've reviewed the options and I've confirmed that I'm confident in what I already believe. And that's good too. But I would say, like, even if you are good and confident in your convictions, read it, maybe even not primarily for your own benefit, but for the benefit of the people you'll encounter who will have these questions. And then you have that basis to say, like, look, here's the deal. And here's, you know, what you can explore on this to learn more.
What was your favorite question to not only write about, but to answer?
Ooh. I would say probably the question about the atonement, which is basically the question of, like, how does salvation work? So Christians all agree that Jesus' life and death and resurrection, like, that's how we are saved. But that really doesn't explain, like, what are the inner mechanics there? Like, why is that what God chose to do to make this happen? And I think a lot of Christians don't even really realize that there's disagreement on this, and there has been for centuries. And so this is what I wrote my master's thesis on. So I, you know, had done some extra research on that one. And that's something that I really enjoy, like, talking and writing about to get people to think, often for the first time, even if you've grown up in church, like, okay, how does this work? What does this mean? Like, why did God choose to become human and to die this terrible death and rise again? Like, were there other ways he could have done it? And if not, why? Like, why was this the way that made sense? And I think that can be really, like, on the intellectual side, really helpful and really strengthen our faith in that sense to think it through. And then I think also just understanding the story of it at that deeper level is really helpful at a personal and spiritual level as well. So I definitely enjoyed that chapter. And then I would say the second one that I would list for that would be the chapter on what happens to people who never hear about Jesus. Because that's, I think, a question that comes up a lot. And especially for kids, I think there you hit a certain age and then it's like, wait a minute, there are people who don't know this. And, you know, especially kids that have, like, a really soft heart and are really, you know, passionate about Jesus and want to make sure that everybody, you know, has a chance to go to heaven and to be right with God. I think that's a really important question, too. And I enjoyed the research for that one as well.
Oh, that's exciting. Now I'm going to go back and read those with a different look on it, because I know they're one of your two favorites. So I can't wait to go back. Well, for the person who is floundering in how to follow Jesus, what would you tell them? What advice would you give them?
So I think my main thing would just be, like, don't freak out. Like, it's not the fact that you're having these questions and maybe these doubts does not mean that you're not a Christian. It doesn't mean that you can't be a Christian, that you can't keep going to church, that you can't continue this exploration. Like, you don't have to figure it all out right away and make a firm commitment that's going to last you for the rest of your life. Obviously, you know, you want to begin that process. You want to begin, you know, researching this and thinking about it and praying about it. But, like, in the short term, don't freak out. And I think as churches, it's super important for us to cultivate an atmosphere in which those kind of questions and research and exploration can happen without, like, setting an artificial timeline of it, of, you know, you need to figure this out or you can't come to church here anymore. I think that's the worst thing we can do. And the better way is to make ourselves available, to like offer ourselves as resources, to say like, let me help you through this question. Let me walk with you through this question. Let me help you not freak out, and figure out, I think you do want to reach sort of that new stage. Like you go through this deconstruction, you do want to reconstruct, but you don't want to force it. You don't want to try to, bypass sort of that desert experience, like that spiritual journey, because if you just like squish your doubts back down or your questions, and don't really deal with them appropriately, they're going to come back up and it's going to be worse, you know, the second time around.
Mm-hmm. Well, what Bible verse kind of keeps you going? Like, do you have a life Bible verse or one that you focus on monthly?
I'm a big fan of Ephesians 3. There's a prayer in there that Paul prays for the church, and I'm looking this up on my phone so I can read it to you. We had this read at our wedding. And so it's, for this reason, I kneel before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name. I pray that out of his glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power, together with all God's holy people, to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. And so then it goes on to say, now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. I like that one because it gets at both sort of the small scale of like being filled with the knowledge of Christ's love in your own life and on a daily basis and being rooted in that and dwelling like in the power of the Spirit and being animated by that. But then it also gets at that bigger picture of like the whole church together across time and across distance, working together in that purpose and following Jesus together. And I think it's so important to have that more communal aspect of we're not doing this by ourselves. We're not, you know, picking what we think is right and true on our own. We're not serving on our own. It's something that we do together as a group. God, certainly we're saved as individuals, yes, but God chose to make a people, not just like isolated individuals. And I think especially in America, where we're so individualistic and we, you know, like to be our own people and make our own choices, that we need to be reminded that we're together in this, not just on our own.
Amen. If you want to be challenged, you want to pick up Bonnie's brand new book, A Flexible Faith, Rethinking What It Means to Follow Jesus Today. I know, Bonnie, people are going to want to connect with you. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me. My website is just bonniechristian.com. So just no space and then add a .com to my name. And you can get in touch there. There's like a little question box where you can submit a question that will get to me. And I check that, you know, almost daily. And then I'm also on Twitter, just at Bonnie Christian, no space or special characters or anything. And I can respond there as well. So those are the two easiest ways to get in touch. And then those are also ways to keep track of what I'm writing, whether that be this book or, new books in the future, or even just like the writing that I do on a week-to-week basis, which is more newsy and more political. But some of it, I think, is topically appropriate for readers who are interested in this as well.
Well, we will have all of those links in the show notes for you. Bonnie, I have one last question to ask you before I let you go. The series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
That's an interesting one. I would say that just the having lived in different places and experienced different churches, that has really been a major factor in pushing me to write this book and helping me to see the need for it Not because I you know, want to sort of erase the differences between those churches and traditions, but because I know that I've benefited from them. And even going to churches, I think about the one that I attended before I moved to Minnesota, so in my early 20s. It was a church that I didn't have a lot in common with them on some points theologically. Like, there was a lot we agreed on, but there were some big disagreements. But they were fine with having that disagreement under their roof, and they really welcomed me into the community, and then we worked together, and we did. I was a leader in Awana there, and so I think back to that and to other experiences where, you know, there is no perfect local church, and we often may find ourselves in contexts where we don't have, you know, perfect agreement. It's not our ideal congregation, but we can still, you know, learn so much and be inspired by our fellow Christians despite these differences. And so I think just knowing what that has meant for my own faith development, that's something that I want to share with other people, so that they can experience that as well. And we can learn from and draw on other Christian traditions that are not our own. And that's a good thing, and something that I hope that a flexible faith makes more possible.
I think it does, Bonnie. And it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. You have inspired, I know, conversations already. I hear them. The birds are talking. And I believe God has some extraordinary plans for this book. And I cannot wait to see what else you do within your life.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you again for having me. I've really enjoyed this as well.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.